Hello, and happy Monday to all. I am your host, Amy Toy of Angel Answers. I have a very exciting, informative, and inspirational and energizing show for you today. We have feature author Lynn Woodland here, and I'm very honored that with that, we're going to be interviewing her in just a moment about her book entitled Making Miracles, Creating New Realities for Your Life and Our World. And this is from Namaste Publishing. But before we start our enlightening conversation, we have a few announcements as usual. We're going to be taking callers at the second half of the show if you have any questions. And of course, we'll do some message work on me. 1-888-627-6008 is for those callers in the U.S. and Canada. And those outside the U.S. and Canada, the phone number is 530-413-4522. And of course, you can find me at angelanswers11.com. And if you want to email me during the show, if you don't want to call in or you can't call in, it's angelicamy35@gmail.com. So I'm very honored to have Lynn Woodland. Lynn, thank you for coming on the show. Welcome. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Amy.
Oh, it's an honor. I thank you for agreeing to be on the show. Your book is really awesome. Tell us about yourself a little bit, Lynn. You know, acquaint us to how you got the concept of the book, maybe a little bit about yourself.
Well, my intention with the book was to create something in book form that echoed what I'd been doing for decades. I've been involved in some kind of group work, facilitating groups of one sort or another for, gosh, more than 35 years now. I have a long background in metaphysical work, spiritual healing. I started my career as a counselor in a chemical dependency program that actually was very unique and innovative and had a very spiritual transpersonal approach. Actually got a grant through the Maryland State Drug Abuse Administration way, way back in the 70s when alternatives were a little bit more of interest. And what I've seen in group work, I've done a lot of individual counseling, but I actually let it go after a decade or so because I just noticed that what happened when people came together in groups is that there was an amplification of healing energy. Things happened way more quickly in a group setting than ever happened one-on-one. And what I aimed to do with this book was to set up a type of virtual group experience. The whole book, Making Miracles, is set up as one big group experiment that immediately turns readers into participants in a big miracle-making experiment as soon as they start reading. And it even draws from the edges of science by inviting readers to bypass space and time to reach out in loving compassion to all other readers wherever they happen to be in space-time. And then the experiment involves focusing and directing this collective energy of love to see what kind of miracles we can create for ourselves and each other and the world. So ultimately, instead of having a private experience with the content, which is how most self-help books are set up, readers are having a spiritual experience in love with other readers, and the whole book becomes a sort of prayer set in motion on behalf of every reader.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, it does. And I love how you kind of I noticed that at the end of the chapters, you have what you call what experiment, I believe. And you talk about past, present, and future readers. And I thought that was kind of cool, you know, that you did that. There's no time limits. I mean, I'm a reader, so people ask me, when will things happen? And there is no time, really. It's all relative. Isn't that true?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of an outlandish premise that we can all join beyond space and time and generate energy this way. But really, all the experiments I put forth in the book are just new applications for things that science has already shown, or at least strongly suggested to be possible, because we now know that time as a line really is an illusion, and mm-hmm. the power of consciousness is tremendous. That, you know, even physicists are saying that reality basically shows up the way we expect it to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's nothing new in a lot of metaphysical work. The law of attraction and such teaches that. Yet when we do this work outside of time, it adds this whole another kink to it all, in that we actually can see results before we've formed an intention. Like a great example was a guy who read the book and shared his story with me of waking up one morning with a really terrible sore throat. It was so bad he had to set up a doctor's appointment for that afternoon. But mid-afternoon, boom, it just went away. So he canceled the appointment, went about his business. The next morning he woke up and he had just a little touch of it back again. So he sat down for a morning meditation and he grabbed my book to help him focus his morning reflection. He thought he'd give himself some healing time. And he opened randomly, went right to the chapter that was about healing a condition at its start. And so he thought, oh, that's really cool synchronicity, but that didn't blow his mind. What did really blow his mind is when the exercise actually guided him to send healing back in time to himself to 2 p.m., every 2 p.m. in the past. And he realized, oh, my gosh, that's when my sore throat went away. Boom, 2 p.m. yesterday afternoon. Mm-hmm. So there's something in this work where we tap into this generator-like wave of energy that is all of these different hearts and minds joining in common intent, you know, past, mm-hmm. present, and future. And we really open to things happening in a non-linear way where we really can transcend a lot of popularized teachings that stress, well, we have to change our beliefs in order to create a different reality. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we just receive grace that's actually sent from the future.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting chapter as well. I mean, it's interesting because the book really does talk about miracles. And, you know, I was brought up that miracles, I don't know, happen, you know, like maybe like very rarely. Explain that. Miracles are for everyone, isn't that correct? It's not just for the privileged few. I mean, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, you know, I think that a lot of what we define as miraculous are just aspects of natural law that we don't yet understand. You know, quantum science is showing us that we live in an illusion of our physical perceptions. And that actually a completely different reality with very different laws exists in the realms that are too small or too large to see and touch with our senses. Mm-hmm. And from really the far out edges of science, we're seeing on one hand there's this field of limitless energy that if we only knew how to tap it, it could just do anything for us. And scientists call that the zero point field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from another whole body of scientific research on people who have had near-death experiences where they have actually died, been declared dead, and then revived and came back and told their story, they talk about going into this energy field of light that they call synonymous with unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put those two bodies of science, of research together, It just looks like this clinical death experience releases people from the limitations of physical perception. They're able to have a direct experience of the zero point field, which we generally don't in our physical bodies, and they call it love. They come back calling it love. So I think we're just starting to see science and religious teaching, spiritual teaching, starting to meet in this very interesting place, showing us the existence of a limitless, benevolent, intelligent energy that's everywhere, ever present, but we can't see it. You know, to me that sounds like a really good definition of God.
Yes, I agree with that. And it's funny you talk about near-death experiences. I had one in September 2000, and I kind of shut down all my gifts. And I went to your website, lynnwoodland.com, which is an awesome website, by the way, too. And I read Spiritual Emergencies because I was reading the book, and I'm like, I wish I had this like 12 years ago. Because everything, what happened to me was my gifts just opened up right away. You know, everything I was hearing, seeing, spirit, you know, feeling things, I was more heightened, you know, sensitivity. And I didn't know how to deal with it. It took me about 2 years to figure out which end was up. So
yeah,
I thought that was interesting. I said, oh, where was she 12 years ago?
I think it was even
I read 12 years ago.
We just didn't hook up.
No, it was just a long time ago. I had no clue.
I guess you needed to. I bet you just learned so much by having to plow through that on your own. I bet you just developed in ways you just.
Into the spirit. I'm a writer myself. I haven't like written a metaphysical book. I'm mostly fiction. But I'm, you know, my guide is on me to write books and everything. And he's like, you should write about that. I'm like, yeah, I will one of these days. But your book was so cool because it was like talking about going into the light. I remember after my near-death experience coming, I knew I had had one because I saw the light. My mother's yelling at me because I had this big car accident. She's like, yeah, how could you do this to me? And I'm just like, I don't care, lady. You know, I'm just seeing this light. I knew I had been transformed. And then I went, that started my spiritual journey. And it was interesting you said that about the zero point field because, you know, we can tap into things. People don't realize how much we can tap into. And what power, you know, we can really grasp. It's an amazing time for all of us, I think. Don't you feel that way?
Yes, absolutely. And there's even a little point I think I started out to make and I just went somewhere else, forgot to answer. When you were asking about miracles, you know, because there is this energy field, like scientists don't know how to tap it, but I think that just a very easy, natural to all of us way is through the energy of unconditional love. And and that's really what gives rise to the miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not hard. It's easy.
No.
And you know, I think when, if you just start asking a lot of people, have you ever had a miracle? If you take them away from, you know, everybody they know and just put them in a room alone with you, most people will start to recount some very profound spiritual experience they've had. So we don't talk about them necessarily, but I think people have had them.
I feel so too. People just, you know, maybe don't want to go there or think that it was just, you know, a one-time occurrence. And you talk about in the book too that this becomes almost like a habit. You know, these occurrences. Once you start tapping into this energy, it's like they just start happening over and over again.
Yeah, they become normal.
Yeah, they're normal. People don't feel that way, though, when they don't have, I mean, I've been suggesting this, your book to my clients, too, you know, who are more open to this about, you know, really reading this book, because some people will ask me, well, how do I tap into this, or how do I do this? And I think your book has a good format. I like how you go from easy, moderate, or medium to hard. That's what I feel like. It's like you went from easy, you know, medium to hard. And it was really good because it got the vibrational energy, or at least mine, you know, kind of, it went through stages. It was really cool. My guide's like, yeah, you got to have this lady. I can't wait for you to do it. So it was really a good way of doing that. But how would you talk to somebody that maybe doesn't believe, because in the middle of the book, you talk about, if it doesn't happen or something like that, how do you talk to people that don't, you know, they say they've tried this and it doesn't work? What is your advice to them?
Well, you know, there's a whole section in my book that addresses what might be some of the payoffs and gains to not going where we tell ourselves we want to go. You know, we may have these long-held heart's desires and feel that we're just impossibly separate from them, that it just never works for us. It works for everybody else, but not for us. And if we have those kinds of things in our lives, things we've pushed to make change, and we've put all kinds of energy and intention into it, and it just doesn't, then invariably there's some lesson we're still learning, some gain we're still receiving. And these hidden agendas tend to be really hidden for many of us. They aren't intentional, conscious wishes. You know, none of us wants to feel stuck or unhappy or in pain or whatever it is. We don't like struggle. But if there's a hidden agenda that's really in conflict with our intentional desire, then we stay stalled, and we're not going to get unstalled until we start to unroot some of what the payoff is. You know, an example of this might be someone who has a serious illness, and they want to get well. They want to get well. They're doing everything to not be sick, and yet the event of the illness, say, actually caused them, or forced them, rather, to leave a job they hated, to shift their whole sense of priorities so that they're putting themselves and their well-being first. It may be the first time for some people in their lives that they've been the center of a lot of receiving attention, even if it's just going to the doctor, the physical therapist, the acupuncturist, the massage therapist, you know, all these people who are paid to give them an hour of attention. And there might be such a payoff that at really a higher, I think of this as more of a spiritual agenda, there might be a need to have that balancing experience of devoting time and energy to self-care and to learn the experience of receiving, and to be able to listen to what one wants to do in life rather than putting all of one's energy into doing what one should. That balancing experience might be so necessary that it's even more important in an unconscious way to letting the illness go, you know, which would cause the person to go right back to the life they were living that was not really meeting some deeper needs.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. I mean, when people, let's say, you worked as an addictions counselor, I find that interesting as well. You know, like if somebody has cancer or, you know, an addiction, let's say, you're right, self-care. Usually people kind of, I don't know, like with addictions, and numb themselves, for example, with alcohol or drugs. Maybe they have to pay attention to what they need to. Isn't that correct? I mean, how would you apply that to that kind of scenario? Because I have a lot of people that I work with who have addictions.
Yeah, I tend to, these days, define addiction very broadly. It can really relate to way more than just the substances we think of as, oh, I got to get counseling for that. Most of us are addicted to something. It's what we really give ourselves up to in a way that keeps us less conscious. It's something that we use to try to fill a void that's not going to get filled from that particular substance or activity. Because just about any activity, even meditation, can be used in an addictive way to alleviate pain and numb us out so that we're not suffering. And essentially, addictions are a form of self-care that work within a limited framework until they stop working, until they take on a life of their own and become a problem in and of themselves. Something I've found with addictions is that there, especially with the more severe addictions, there tends to be a strong inclination in those people to want to do it all for themselves, to want to take care of themselves, to want to self-nurture, to want to solve all their problems themselves. There's this idea that somehow reaching out for help is just out of their reality. And I found with addictions that sometimes that's the first place to start. Well, I mean, that's certainly true of traditional AA type programs, that or 12 step programs that talk about reaching out for help as being the first, you know, really important first step, mm-hmm. just admitting that you need help. Okay. And, you know, the more we try to do everything ourselves, and this dynamic can be very present in people dealing with illnesses as well as people who may be abusing substances in an addictive way. The more we try to do everything ourselves, and it might be someone who is just trying very hard to be perfect, the mm-hmm. more we actually disconnect not just from the other people in our lives, but from our capacity to let God in, to let mm-hmm. ourselves be supported by the God energy of the universe around us. Mm-hmm. We also disconnect from our higher, wiser guidance, you know, our intuitive mm-hmm. inclinations that just direct us to be in the right place at the right time and to create ease rather than struggle. You know, we just mm-hmm. disconnect from all the good stuff of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's often a really important pattern to break first. And I see that rather than taking something away, you know, addictions are about doing something we think is wrong, rather than mm-hmm. just breaking the addiction and taking it out, there needs to be a lot of attention given to what do we need to add into life. Because mm-hmm. we tended to just give ourselves goodness and pleasure and relief in one very narrow way, i.e. the addiction. So we need to look at how to fill ourselves rather than take one more thing away from ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Finding our heart's desire, which is my next question. I love that section in the book. I'm sorry if I'm jumping around. I'm just,
fine.
I have so many questions. I like in the one chapter, you talk about manifesting your heart's desires. And it's amazing, going on a little bit on, chapter 14 and 12 through whatever, and you have that list. And do you really think that, you say in the book too, that writing out a list, but also, I used to say, I want this or something from better than my, you know, highest and best good. And you kind of brought that out. I thought that was interesting. How does that help you? How can I put this? How does that help you? Is it just on a personal testimony, you think, manifesting your heart's desires to show you in your own reality? Or what's your explanation about that?
I'm not quite clear what your question is.
I'm sorry. About, you know, when you're doing manifesting your heart's desires, is it showing you in your own life how it can be on a larger scale, perhaps, showing up in your own life? Little miracles, let's say, and how it could be on a grander scale, a more global way. I don't know how to explain it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think I see where you're going.
Oh, okay.
You know, desiring from life is, you know, it's not a selfish thing. When we're listening to our true heart's desires, even if they seem petty, mm-hmm. they tend to be little cues from our inner guidance that are nudging us toward our path of highest good. And we often are taught in life, be it through our teachings that say, you know, it's selfish to want more for oneself, or our experiences that say it's no use wanting more because, you know, I never get it.
Mm-hmm.
We often have that passion for what we want, that desire impulse squelched and contained and restricted. And when we do that, again, we restrict some of the inner guidance that will direct us not toward an addiction that's just mm-hmm. meant to soothe us a bit through the suffering, but truly to our path that's going to not just support our own well-being and inner peace and happiness, but that is ultimately going to connect us with the higher truth, that as I love myself, I tap into this greater reality that I am not separate from any of you. And then after a while, loving myself becomes a path of asking, well, how can I love you more? How can I serve you? How can I serve all of us because we are one? And so, you know, we all want what we want. And there's a million books out there about using the law of attraction to create what we want in life, because we all just want what we want. And sometimes we can't step beyond that until we start to see the possibilities for ourselves to have fulfillment and joy in life. Rather than negating that, I think it's really important to honor that desire. And to see that the path to me getting what I want, or for you to get what you want, the most effective path is through us all standing side by side and wanting that for all of us. In other words, as I stand up for you as well as myself, I start to see through the experience of my own miracles that together we're so much stronger than we could ever be separately.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of what I do in the exercises is to combine what I think of as manifesting, which is giving an intention and attention to something we want to call in, and combining it with miracle making, which I think of as just tapping into love or God energy in a way that changes us and calls all of our highest good into being. But the outcomes stop being the point, because the point is the love. Miracle making isn't very much about outcome. Manifesting through intention is all about the outcome. And if we can start to see that we actually can follow our heart's desires in a way that we are in a state of love for one another, I think that's a way that humanity is evolving. I think that's a next step in our human development, of really understanding that together we can tap into a power that we couldn't get to without love. Mm-hmm. And without love, we couldn't use responsibly.
Which leads me to my next question about self-responsibility. Now, I like this section too. Like I said, this book was, I couldn't put it down. It was very intense, and I had to put it down and pick it back up. And it was really good. I mean, like I said, it, you know, I had to go through it a little quickly because, you know, we were interviewing. I'm going to go back and read all the chapters again and do it slowly. But self-responsibility, you talk about that. What do you mean by self-responsibility?
Well, you know, in this big body of work that's out there nowadays that shows how to use intention to change physical reality. You know, there's this aim to create these wonderful, fortunate coincidences where we really do just see reality shifting through the power of our intention without even the need for a lot of physical effort. And that's like, that's wonderful. It's so exciting. And anyone who cracks a book on the law of attraction can usually see some wonderful little serendipities start to manifest in their lives because these techniques work. They're not that hard. And yet, you know, at the same time, those same people will often still feel that there's all these cool little things happening, but the big stuff is still stuck. Why doesn't that shift? And for that to happen, we need to look at not just our connection to the little serendipities of life, you know, that and the fortunate coincidences that we call miracles. We have to look at our connection to all of the unfortunate coincidences that we like to call circumstances beyond our control. And it's very tricky how to do this, because it's so easy to shift into a place of blaming and shaming ourselves for anything in our lives that we don't like, oh, I don't like that, so I must have done something wrong. And then we just burden ourselves with a big old load of blame and shame, because we didn't somehow think every thought correctly and breathe every breath in the right way. You know, I see blame and shame as being completely useless in stepping into more of an experience of spiritual mastery. It doesn't do a thing for us. if we can instead look at the template of our lives as they are right now, like what do I like in my life, and see that there's some reflection of my expectation, my vibration that's showing up in the mirror image of that circumstance that's working for me, then I can look at other areas of my life that maybe seem stuck, that I don't like, and say, well, what is that it's showing me about what I learned to expect from life? Because it's probably something we learned way, way back when, before we had a choice in the matter, that's lurking in a very unconscious part of our mind. You know, we may have learned that we're not worthy. We may have had adults in our lives teach us that we don't get to have more. You know, we all have different lessons that we've incorporated, internalized, and hold in an unconscious way. But if we can look at life in that way, and instead of saying, well, this isn't my fault, say, well, what part of me might have called this forth? How might this experience be serving me? Then we can actually diffuse a lot of the power that these unconscious programs have over running our lives. We have a lot more choice. So that's what I mean by self-responsibility. It you know, it's not for everyone. It really isn't.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not. You're
shame,
right.
It's not going to help us.
Right. Right. But isn't that part of that payoff, too, sometimes, that payoff and gain you were talking about, in a way?
There's a lot of payoff to being.
Yeah, I was going to say, you hit the lottery there.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, sorry I'm late. I couldn't help it. It was traffic. Rather than, I've been dreading this meeting all day, and that traffic worked kind of well for me.
I know. Well, Lynn, we're going to take a 5-minute break. I want you to come back. We're going to take some callers, if that's okay with you. I'd love
that's
to have
great.
You back. All right. And the numbers for the U.S. and Canada is 1-888-627-6008. Maybe I put too many eights in there. And outside the U.S. and Canada, it's 530-413-4522. And we'll see you back here in about 5 minutes. And welcome back to Angel Answers with Amy Toy. We have a featured author, Lynn Woodland. It's about her book, Making Miracles and Create New Realities for Your Life and Our World. Well, welcome back, Lynn. Thank you so much for an informative first half of the show. I believe we have a caller on the line. And hello. Are you there?
I'm here. How you doing? Amy?
Hi, Christopher. How you doing?
Very well, and this is quite a cool show you had today. Very interesting.
Cool. Do you have a question for our author?
Well, I guess I guess I could make a statement. I greatly identify with the concept of addictive behavior, because as you know, I've been addicted to soda pop, and people can say, you know, well, that's silly. That's not comparable to, you know, drugs or alcohol. And granted, it's not. It certainly affected my health in a detrimental way, so there's a lot of more subtle types of addiction that can hurt you too, you know, that you have to be mindful of, and, you know, I would recommend Lynn's book for people who have these quote-unquote lesser addiction problems too, because that they're just as bad for your health.
Well, yeah, well, Lynn did bring about that, you know, there's, everyone's addicted to something, right, Lynn?
Yeah, many of it, for the most part, yeah. And, you know, I actually have a suggestion for you, Chris, and this has been a really interesting exercise for a lot of people I've worked with. I've often suggested it in my workshops to folks. Begin by, instead of looking at, okay, how can I wipe out soda from my life, ask yourself instead, what is my highest heart's desire? And just get something you really feel passionate about in mind. And then as a symbolic act, and a symbolic act is where we do an action and give it greater intent so that it has more energetic power to it. As a symbolic act, tell yourself that if I give up soda for a whole month, anything is possible. If I can do that, then anything is possible for me, including my heart's desire. And dedicate your letting go of soda for the month to this calling forth, this bigger intention of bringing in your highest heart's desire, and do it in a really absolute way so that you don't cheat even once, and if you do, then you have to start all over for it to count, you know, for the exercise to count. It becomes a type of walking affirmation process, where by doing this thing that, you know, you say is bad for you, or by not doing the thing you say is, you know, I should stop because it's bad for you, which is a should, you're connecting it to something you're really passionate and heartfelt about, which then brings you to the question, anytime you want to just cheat, you ask yourself, if not having this soda right now meant I could manifest my heart's desire, would I be willing to? Which do I want more, you know, my soda or my heart's desire? And you know, generally in that moment, it'll be, oh, well, yeah, I think I would take my heart's desire. And it makes it really easy to make that choice, easier at any rate. And doing this actually does have a couple of effects. One is it gives you a whole month clear, which makes it a lot easier to change a habit that has been very difficult to break. It also really does energetically start calling in your highest heart's desire. So you might want to play with that and see what happens. I've seen a lot of people have very, very interesting results with that one.
I thank you greatly for that advice there, Lynn, and, you know, I look forward to seeing more of your books in the future, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Chris, and I'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome, Amy. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Well, Lynn, you brought an important another next question about affirmations. I see in the footnotes of your book something about the less traditional affirmation that you talk about. Can you explain that to me? Which, you know, I thought that was interesting. I'm like, I don't care. It's an affirmation. It works, right?
I think what you're referring to is that there were a couple of places in my book where I actually gave people an affirmation in the form of, well, actually one that I just gave to my group of on my webinar, mm-hmm. was the question, what feels too impossibly good to happen? What's mm-hmm. too impossibly good to happen? You just couldn't believe it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And some people who have been well-versed in New Thought teachings rebel against that because it feels against what they've learned, that
mm-hmm.
one should never phrase a statement like that or a thought like that in terms of the negatives, that
mm-hmm.
it just gives more negative to it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've found, and that it affirms negative beliefs,
mm-hmm.
What I found is that we don't need to change our beliefs in order to manifest something. And that
mm-hmm.
this is kind of a fallacy. Like, beliefs are important things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet,
mm-hmm.
changing a belief can feel like climbing Mount Everest, whereas imagining something can happen in the blink of an eye. And imagination
mm-hmm.
is way more powerful. And if you think of what happens when you ask yourself, well, what's way too impossibly good to have happen in my life? You start thinking about all kinds of wonderful things. And
mm-hmm.
you don't shroud it all with this cloud of attachment. Like, can I have this? Oh, I don't think I can have this. Oh, I need to change my beliefs in order to have this. I need to believe, but
mm-hmm.
I don't believe. You know, you just don't mm-hmm. go there. You're just imagining all these lovely things. And you've let go of that whole debate and struggle you might be having in your own head about whether it's possible or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you essentially are doing the energetic and intentional work that calls lovely things in. Because
mm-hmm.
attachment and fear is a big buzzkill to manifesting.
Mm-hmm.
The minute we're in that place of, oh, wouldn't it be lovely if we're in a state of
mm-hmm.
love? The minute we go into, can I have that? I don't know. We've shifted from being in the present in a state of love to jumping into the future and being in a state of fear. Attachment is a form of fear. And
mm-hmm.
that just shuts down all of the magnetic energy that calls in those wonderful things. So
mm-hmm.
sometimes I do suggest that people do an affirmation along the lines of what's too impossibly good to happen. Because it frees the mind. It helps us get out of our own way.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because, you know, I'm of the New Age thought, but really I'm open to everything and anything, you know, and I thought, oh, I'm going to try this. And some things did manifest miracles in my life that I didn't think were coming about, and they came in with some financial stuff. So I thought it was really cool. I was like, wow, this stuff really works.
Oh, I'm really excited to hear that.
Yeah, you know, that's why I wanted to talk to you, because some people are stuck on the, you know, the Louise Hay way of affirmation. You know, it's got to be worded this way, or it's got to be, you know, and that's not the case. I mean, it just, as long as, you know, when you're, I think it's when you're in allowance with things too. When you you surrender the outcome, and you have a chapter about surrendering, which I thought was interesting too. And usually when you don't pay attention to it, it comes in faster than if you're like,
yeah, it does. And it's not that all the Louise Hay teachings are wrong.
Exactly.
It's that they're not everything. There's some more. I really don't believe in a one-size-fits-all program that works for everybody every time, or any technique that works for everybody. You know, all the techniques in all these bazillions of books that have been coming out really since the 80s are just ways to trick ourselves to get out of the way so that we can just be in the moment in love and let miracles happen. That, you know, that in essence, that's all it is. And, you know, I'm a really big believer in sharing our miracle experiences, because when somebody hears that you had an experience and I had one and somebody else has one, it starts to normalize the experience of miracles. In fact, namastepublishing.com, Namaste is my publisher, they actually have a place on their website where they invite people to go on and actually share the miracles that they've seen happen in working with the book. And it's not just to promote the book. It's really to help other people have miracles. Because first, it's kind of like popcorn. You know, you just wait and wait and wait for the first pop. And then there's one. Then there's one more and another. And then soon, we're all popping. You know, we're all having miracles.
Yes. And you mentioned every Tuesday you have a webinar. You want to explain that, how people can tap into that if they're interested in, you know, your book and your work? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a Making Miracles webinar, and it's actually the newest format of a group I've been leading now for, gosh, 25 years. And instead of doing it in one space, I'm now doing it by webinar so that it really can be available to anyone, and you can participate individually just by yourself with your own computer, or you can actually just get a group of friends together to do this work together, which I recommend. It's even more powerful. I make it financially cheaper to do it that way even, because I just see the value of doing this work together. And it really is an opportunity to come together and have this big, a really national, global support group for miracle making. We do a lot of the kind of work we're talking about here, and a lot of experiments. People come back every week, and we've already had lots of people share miracle experiences. And it's very interactive. People can talk to each other and share their experiences, ask questions. And we even partner up sometimes with people we can't even see, and just use the dynamic of group energy to amplify our own work, because, like I said, it happens so much more easily when we do it together than when we just sit in our own space, you know, working the book, doing our own vision boards and affirmations. You know, it's so much easier when we do it together. So I do that every Tuesday, and right now we really are working specifically with the miracle experiment through the whole month of March.
Cool.
And into the warm seasons, later spring and summer, we'll be working more and more with manifesting and how to use intention to call in our highest good.
Awesome.
Yeah, I've gotten some invites. I'm gonna think in April when my schedule frees up on Tuesdays, I'm definitely gonna join the webinar. That really resonated with my heart. Like I said, your whole book resonated. And you're talking about group prayer. You want to explain a little bit, while we have time, about group prayer and how that, the experiments you talk about, one group prayer group was, one group were prayed for and the other wasn't. You want to explain that a little bit, the results?
Well, that's just a little bit of, Larry Dossey's work. Larry Dossey is a great resource for the medical research done on prayer, and he's all over prayer. He's written a couple of books on it. And he just cites some studies where people who have been prayed for healed faster than the people in the control group who weren't, even though nobody knew they were being prayed for, even though, you know, it wasn't even about believing in prayer, anything like that. And there's actually even more amazing research that's come in the study of time and consciousness. There's one study of healing being sent back in time to people who didn't even know they were being prayed for. And there was just a very strong result, a positive result that prayer had a healing effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, in my mind, prayer is when we hold a loving intention on behalf of another person. That's a way of praying for them. And I know there's many different variations and forms of prayer, but that's what I mean by the miracle experiment essentially being a big group prayer that we set in motion for one another.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. That is a wonderful. Yes, groups do the group dynamics. It does help. I love it. I think your concept is a wonderful thing. And you also quote Lynn McTaggart. She's a friend of mine is into Lynn McTaggart. I think I'm going to have to start reading some of her books. And you quote from her, The Intention Experiment. Has she been inspiration to you in other ways?
Well, she's just wonderful in that she's a straight science writer. She wrote another great book called The Field. And she just writes about science, but science from the cutting edge. And it's science that reads like metaphysics, and it's very easy, well, as easy as any of this stuff can be, to understand. She writes for the layperson. She makes it very interesting. She talks about the some of the inside story and personal lives of some of these scientists. But it's interesting reading her work. I know, especially in the intention experiment, when she was talking about the science of consciousness and time and how, you know, everything we put out there is a thought, an intention has power to change the physical reality. And there's even a lot of indication that intention can move backwards and forwards in time, maybe even more easily than in current time. And you can almost see her boggling her own mind. Like, she just got to this point where I can't quote her, but it felt like she was saying, well, then what? If everything we think and do is changing everything, past, present, and future, what? I could almost feel her own wires frying, you know, and she pulled together her conclusions.
Yeah, I've had those experiences, and I don't study science, but from a metaphysical point of view, I get fried.
And she doesn't go into the metaphysics, really. I mean, she just pulls together the science, and it's just so mind-boggling. It's just so amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. My friend used to quote her all, or, you know, she read her books a lot, and she's like, she's a little, you know. And finally, I want to talk about your mentor, Dr. Fuller. I thought we're going to just, you know, we can leave the audience hanging about the dental work, which I thought was pretty cool. But how did you get in contact with Dr. Fuller? I think that...
it was just serendipity many, many years ago. I think we were just destined to meet. He was a long-time teacher of mine. We wound up collaborating on some phone conferences, international phone conferences, toward the end of his life. He was a healer who, for almost 50 years, traveled the world laying hands on people mm-hmm. and praying for them. And they would have all kinds of healing effects. Mm-hmm. But what he was best known for was this just amazing miracle of people's teeth growing new fillings while other people mm-hmm. could just watch. And it wouldn't happen mm-hmm. once in a blue moon. It would happen all over an auditorium every time he did a healing service. And I've gotten very interested in this phenomenon. I actually had someone who read my book have that phenomenon happen to her while reading the last chapter. I've seen it happen some in my own work. I've worked with another healer who's had that experience. And I actually am talking to a lovely young man in France who's he's just in his early 20s and an amazing healer. He was in one of my classes, and I don't consider him a student at all because he is so advanced. And he's having that experience frequently in his healing work now, too. I think the two of us are going to get together. He's in France. I'm in Minneapolis. And do a webinar together about this phenomenon and offering a healing service so people can see for themselves, see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, Lynn, our time is running short. I really enjoyed your book and this talk, and I'm going to join the webinar next month. And it was a wonderful, you know, where people can find you. Give us your website again, and you know, where they can find the book and so on. So where can
it's
we find
LynnWoodland.com. Mm-hmm. That's LynnWoodland. I believe it's starting to come out into bookstores now, but if you can't find it in your local bookstore, it's on Amazon, and you can get it through Namaste Publishing.
Wonderful.
And there's also a video if you want to experience a miracle experiment, the first chapter experiment, is on a little video on my website. You can just go there anytime and just be part of the miracle experiment energy. Play with it.
Wow.
Have fun.
Wonderful, Lynn. Well, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. It was a phenomenal experience, and I can't wait to hear more about you.
Well, it was a pleasure, Amy. Thank you so much. You were delightful.
Oh, you are too, sweetheart. Have a great day. Goodbye to my audience. And next week, we're going to have a topic I will be posting. Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay, bye-bye.